title track off the latest release from the group known as Devere, song called Amber Eyes. You're listening to Joe's Garage Radio, where we're on the pursuit tonight to find the essence of the garage, been leaning a little bit heavy into some, you know, rock and roll, punk, alternative, and we're just still on the pursuit of trying to find, you know, that sound, man. So I was thinking having a little bit of a classic cut this next set here. I have the Cramps on the way, but up first here's Iron Maiden.
Slowing outside the rumble is
righty, that's it for me, folks. This has been Joe's Garage Radio. Thanks for tuning in. And once again, hope you have a great start to your week. Tonight's episode, I tried to find the essence of the garage, tried to find the core root cause of what we're all about, man. But I don't know if I've answered that question here tonight. And I think it deserves further research. So tune in next week as I do more dives and deep cuts into rock and roll, punk, funk, and soul, all on the pursuit of good music. This has been Joe's Garage Radio. Thanks for tuning in. We're going to leave off tonight with Type O Negative and their song, I Don't Want to Be Me.
From school about the incident today.
Scary.
You know, teachers like me, parents, we don't always know as much as you guys do about what's going on with other kids.
Half the time, it's rumors.
Yeah, but if you're ever concerned about a friend who's having trouble with alcohol, prescription drugs, anything, you need to tell an adult, someone you know and trust. That can be hard, but speaking up about a problem is what helping a friend is all about.
For more information, visit underagedrinking.samhsa.gov.
Forbes Avenue is a production of WRCT Pittsburgh. The opinions expressed are those of the participants and not necessarily those of WRCT, its members, or Carnegie Mellon University. Email questions or comments to pa@wrct.org.
Hello, you're listening to Forbes Avenue on WRCT Pittsburgh 88.3 FM. I'm your host, Arshan Das, with my co-host,
Kate Smiggy.
And today we're going to be interviewing Max Gonzalez, also known as Gems.
Hi.
Max is a graffiti artist and muralist in Pittsburgh. He has a pretty interesting story, so I guess we'll let him lead it off. Tell us how you got into graffiti.
Yeah, so I am a full-time muralist, but I always make the distinction to say that I'm, like, first and foremost a graffiti writer. So, like, I have a very, like, graffiti, like, traditional hip-hop lettering background. I'm originally from Southwest Side Chicago. I grew up painting there and just, like, seeing, like, graffiti everywhere I was from, because the neighborhood I'm from is Pilsen, and it's just, like, this very historic Chicano community that's just covered in graffiti. So I just naturally saw it everywhere I was. So even, like, as far as, like, starting to draw graffiti, like, I don't even know how old I was, because I just was mimicking what I saw and what I thought graffiti was. I very much so have always had graffiti in my life. I didn't really start to, like, try to actually paint and get a name in graffiti until I was about, like, 15. I think, like, the first time I used spray paint, though, I was, like, 13, just coming from, like, a construction background and doing vandal-type things with my dad and my brother. And, yeah, from there, around, like, later in high school is when I started to actually really try to push it more, try to do pieces and things, but it really was when I moved to Pittsburgh for college and didn't have, like, parental control and kind of had free reign that I really, really started to push graffiti. So that was, like, age 18. I started writing Gems. Before that, I was writing all kinds of other things, but Gems is, like, really what stuck out to me. And just, like, being in a university format in a city that was unfamiliar to me and just kind of hating the college format I was in, I kind of didn't like to hang around a lot. So every night, I would just go paint on things and put my name everywhere. So in a way, like, me having graffiti was an access to, like, my upbringing to Chicago and kind of, like, that culture that I was brought up with. So being able to, like, export that to Pittsburgh and, like, pull from that inspiration. But yeah, so the whole time through college, I was not doing graffiti as my art form for Carnegie Mellon, but it was still always there.
Yeah, so you studied at Carnegie Mellon, like we are current Carnegie Mellon students. A lot of times when you're around campus, you hear people talking about how the environment here is somewhat depressing or suffocating. Everyone has their own opinions on that, but how do you think the environment of Pittsburgh and Carnegie Mellon contributed to your art?
Yeah, if anything, it was kind of good that I had such a distaste for CMU, just because it forced me to seek, like, the actual Pittsburgh communities outside of the campus areas. Just because, I don't know, like, coming from where I'm from, like, I'm not poor or anything, but I come from a working class family and, like, work construction my whole life. So coming here and, like, even during school, like, working two different jobs, like, working at a restaurant and then, like, working construction during the summers, like, I just couldn't really culturally attach myself to a lot of the other people here, where I was just seeing people who literally princes and princesses, and I was just kind of like, oh my god, and, like, children of, like, CEOs, and it just, like, was very difficult for me to attach myself to that, especially coming from, like, Chicago and kind of loving the more city nitty-gritty side of things. But yeah, so that did push me to eventually start looking into seeing the rest of the East End. So really, I've always, like, prided myself on, like, being very attached to the East End of Pittsburgh. So, like, East Liberty, Bloomfield, Garfield. Yeah, and from there, finding places like Time Bomb Shop, which used to be on Highland Ave, which is, like, a historic hip-hop graffiti store, and Daily Bread, and finding all those friends there. So thank you to CMU for pushing me away.
I think it's sometimes great on artistic journeys to to find inspiration from life and to find inspiration sometimes from those struggles that you face. And I feel like that's the uncomfortable part of the artistic journey. But when you're creating graffiti, what are you thinking about in terms of style and colors? Like, what do those artistic choices look like? Or do you come up with a design beforehand? Or
I would say there's definitely a distinction for me between like my graffiti and my muralism or spray can muralism. As far as graffiti inspiration, like letters, a lot of the inspiration for me does come from Pittsburgh. It wasn't until I moved to Pittsburgh that I had people who were willing to critique my style and tell me like that I sucked for the first time. And I was like, oh, wow, like I just assumed because I know how to draw, I must be good at graffiti. And it's kind of like, well, no, like graffiti is a typographic art form. It's based in lettering and this long history of hip hop. It even predates hip hop. And so I can't reinvent something that's already been mastered and that has this super strong history tied to it. It'd be wrong for me to reject the culture that it comes from young black and brown kids from New York and Philadelphia. Yeah, so I'm always looking to that as a reference point, like original subway graffiti, just wall graffiti. As far as like what I'm contributing to my style writing, and even in my murals, I try to push for there to be as much of a graffiti presence as possible. So any point that I get to introduce traditional graffiti styles into my art, I'd gladly accept it.
It's interesting that you mentioned the different scenes that exist in graffiti from different cities. I wanted to ask you, what are some of the regional differences that exist between what you saw in, say, Chicago and here in Pittsburgh? And how does that influence your style?
Yeah, there absolutely is like a huge distinction between different cities' graffiti styles. Like I even said, like there's a little bit of a contention between who started modern style writing, whether it was Philadelphia or New York, but they both started around the same time in the late 60s. Philadelphia has a very, very distinct style for their like very tall, elongated letters. Even all of their like pieces look like that. It's called a style called Wickeds. And it's just like this very, very gestural style that you probably couldn't even read if you weren't from Philadelphia. Where New York is known for like these rounder, more funky styles. And even being that Philadelphia, Pittsburgh, they're in the same state, yes, they're opposite ends. It's just interesting to note that Pittsburgh does not have a Philadelphia style. Pittsburgh has a bit of his own style, kind of with the advent of Instagram and the internet, styles have started to be diluted a bit. Philadelphia still has its style, but all the styles are kind of meshing a lot. The one thing with Chicago's style is that it actually kind of is very similar to LA's style because of a history of a Chicano and Cholo movement there, where a lot of the original graffiti from LA is referencing kind of like old English styles, and a lot of gangbangers from back then would be riding in that style. So even before style riding was a thing that existed. So a lot of these almost gothic, pointy, like very aggressive looking styles of graffiti were present in LA, and being that there was a large movement of Chicano and Cholo people in Chicago and kind of like migration between the two places, they share that style. Where definitely though, if you go to the south side of Chicago, it's a lot more noticeable, where the north side, it's just kind of like a contemporary mix of all styles. It's Chicago definitely would not have its style if it wasn't for the Mexican-American culture that's present there. Pittsburgh, being that it has zero Mexican-American culture, besides like me and two other people, it was more receptive towards like funky styles, but also like hardcore punk styles.
Do you think, is there anything about placement of the actual lettering that differs in cities, or is it just styles? Like, are there certain places where people tend to tag more often than others based off of regional differences, or have you not seen that?
Yeah, it definitely is a regional thing so even when I first moved here, I was like, oh my god, no one here paints rooftops really, where I love rooftops, and rooftops are super common in Chicago, where you just like climb up a roof and find a sidewall and like paint something up there. I that was like one of my favorite challenges, is like finding a roof. And one thing I was taught by one of my friends is like, you can always find a way up onto that rooftop. Just like, if you give up, then you failed. It's just like, there's always a way. So it taught me to climb really well. I can't climb as well as I used to though, but even if you go to New York or Philadelphia, a lot of box trucks are painted that hasn't caught on in other cities like Pittsburgh, just because it kind of would take an overnight shift of like everyone painting box trucks for it to not stick out like a sore thumb. So yeah, it's just kind of, people have always painted those. Pittsburgh doesn't have subway cars. We have the T, and that actually was painted once at one point, and everyone got arrested. Pittsburgh is actually a bit well known for its like freight graffiti, like freight trains. So it was like people like Prism, Nexky, others from that era, from like NSF crew, who started pushing freight graffiti super heavily. And unfortunately, because Pittsburgh's lost a lot of its industry, a lot of our freights have gone too. So we've definitely fallen from the ranks as being like a freight graffiti city, just because we don't have those surfaces quite as much anymore. But there still absolutely is that history there. But yeah, other cities, like if you go to like LA or Chicago, people love to wild out there, and people love to paint the fronts of like more corporate or franchised businesses. So like a Dunkin' Donuts or a Subway, or just kind of like a Motorola store or whatever, just kind of like blast it, and it gets removed very quickly. But it's just kind of like this more lawless, reckless style out there.
Yeah, so kind of on that topic, I would be interested to hear a little bit more about the legal challenges to graffiti and whether or not you think graffiti can be positive or negative for a community, and what are some of the effects of it?
Yeah, I mean, so sometimes people will bring up the argument like, is graffiti vandalism? And it's like, yes, absolutely. Of course it's vandalism. But I don't think vandalism is a disqualifier for something being art. Just because something is illegal doesn't mean it can't be art. If anything, a lot of art is born from illegal activities or what might have been illegal at that point. It would be best to tell anyone like, yeah, all laws are off and go paint whatever you want. But usually what the best situation for graffiti is when the graffiti writers and the community have a common dialogue. So the more that the graffiti writers can see themselves as a part of the community, the less they see themselves as the villain. So the more that the community says, you guys are the evil graffiti villains, and vilify that person, the more they'll say, yeah, you know what, I am awful and I'm going to ruin your day. There are unspoken rules in graffiti where it's like, don't go over places of worship, no places of education, no playgrounds, no cemeteries, not the front of anyone's house. But yeah, it's a lot of times when you see people doing vandalism or what we call civilian graffiti on places that it shouldn't be, or that are like very destructive and inconsiderate to a community, it's typically not a person that is from the graffiti writing community. It's someone that is some kid or some adult or some drunk adult that is just out there seeking to destroy something in that one moment, and they might not ever do graffiti ever again in their life. So a lot of those incidents do give graffiti a bad rap. And really with graffiti, it's no one's out there thinking or saying, I want to go paint racial slurs or something like awful or make someone feel bad. It's, here's my identity. I've developed this name into my identity. I'm proud of this identity. Or even in Pittsburgh, a lot of the queer and furry communities have started taking up graffiti a lot. And I see that as like a very obvious sign of like agency over identity, or even for furry communities and queer communities, being a furry, that is agency over identity. Choosing a different name for a queer person, it's writing your own narrative and deciding how it's being told, and in what visual aesthetics it's being told in. Graffiti is just the same, where if I want to put up the name Gems Everywhere and I'm doing this very specific style, these very specific locations with the specific character, that's how you're wanting to be interpreted by the community. And even if you go back to the origins of graffiti, it really was disenfranchised youth who didn't see their voice out there in the world. Graffiti's always been around. It always will be around. Even if you go back to caveman times, there's always been graffiti. Roman times, were always scribes into walls. And a lot of those scribes, you'd expect them to be some sort of romantic poetry, but a lot of them are just kind of like jokes and stuff like that. And like saying like, Pythagoras sucks. And like, I said he's Greek, but yeah, so it's just kind of like learning to have a community dialogue and opening up more spaces to graffiti or sanctioned graffiti spaces. People being less afraid of letters.
Going off of that, do you think there is a distinction between murals and graffiti, or do you think people make that distinction because of the way they see graffiti, trying to separate the two, even though they're kind of similar art forms?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of language in the world of graffiti that is kind of difficult to even understand. Or even if you notice, I've been saying graffiti writer. When I'm saying graffiti writer, that's someone who does traditional hip-hop style writing. So you're writing your name on the wall. Where one distinction I make and a lot of graffiti writers make is that graffiti art typically is the form of graffiti that is done with permission or that's sanctioned, or it's a commission. So it can still be hip-hop letters, like it can still be your name, but it was just that it was done legally. Where graffiti, it sometimes gets like misused in the way that someone will call anything done with spray paint graffiti. And it's like, well, no, it's not like traditionally tying itself to style writing. Where some people see the term graffiti as an insult, and it's like, no, it's just like, it's just a style. Where one distinction I make is just like, I usually just refer to murals, or my murals, as like spray can art murals, where it's just spray can art. And there's even a book from the 80s called Spray Can Art that is, I don't know, a good reference point too, just for learning a lot about graffiti. But even the term street art is very loaded. Street art comes after graffiti. Street art is actually a byproduct of graffiti and was made by graffiti writers. Where street art more so often refers to wheat pasting, stencils, and anything that's more kind of like a political statement, where in itself graffiti writing is a political statement in the way that you're saying that I have an identity, I don't want it to be constrained or constructed by the rules of markets or capitalism, I just want it to exist. Where street art more so is specifically about a specific political subject or social issue. But street art, unfortunately, has like been co-opted a lot. Where even if you think of people like Banksy, I don't see street art as always being done as like a pure intention. A lot of times you'll see someone even do something like a commentary on like stop the genocide in Gaza. And then they'll sign their name next to it. And it's like, why do you need a sign in your name? It's a lot of co-opting. Where even in my own case where I've done political graffiti in the past, I just don't sign it. It's just I'm doing it for the movement, for the cause, where then sometimes you'll see people like Banksy or similar to Banksy, they'll do something like that. And it's just like super vague, and it's just a lot easier for people to consume, and people more readily look at the super abstracted, like incoherent street art and think, yeah, that's the thing that's saying something, where they'll look at graffiti, style writing, hip hop, and say, that's just trash, that's vandalism, where it's like, well, one of these here has a very pure intention of just saying, here's my identity, I want to be seen, I want to be understood this way. The other one's saying, ooh, here's some cool imagery that is provocative or interesting in some way. I don't know what I'm saying, or I do know what I'm saying, and I want it to be rewarding for me somehow, even though I'm capitalizing off of a social issue. So it's, very contentious within graffiti world.
Yeah, I can see it. So you used to be a graffiti writer, still are today, but you would spray paint unsanctioned graffiti writing and letters on places. Now you're also a professional artist and you are commissioned to do murals. What was that transition like from being a college kid painting gems to now getting paid for your art? Is there anything that you miss from the good old days?
Yeah, I mean, with graffiti writing, having my agency and over the name Gems is a bit freeing, obviously, where now since I was arrested for graffiti in 2017, I can't write the name Gems illegally in Pittsburgh anymore without it being tied back to me, and then I go to jail because I'm on probation for the rest of my life. As far as that transition, though, since I was arrested, initially I was looking at like 2 to 3 years and like $128,000 restitution, and I was just graduating college, and I was like, oh my God, like, this is going to ruin my life. I was kind of like, all right, I need to like make some money quick. So I started making some art pieces with Gems tags on them and things like that. And with this, I'm definitely not saying that like you need to be arrested and be a number one most wanted graffiti writer to start a mural career. It was more so like, okay, I owe a lot of money. I don't owe student loans, but I owe a lot of money. Better start making money somehow. I developed this following. People know me as Gems, and I can't write that name anymore. All right, then I'll just start using the name in a way that still gives me control over it, but not as in a freeing of a way. But if anything, what really pushed me into muralism was that I had put so many years into learning how to use spray paint and how to use it very quickly and use it in pitch black, so that when I started to do murals or was interested in murals, I was already like, had the can control. I had the ability to paint very quickly and just efficiently. And then my first mural was actually my first like proper official mural was for Central Outreach Wellness Center, which is a health clinic for LGBTQ people and addicts and users on the North Shore. And since then, they've branched out to having many locations, and I've actually done tons of murals for them, and now they're my PCP. And so I definitely owe them a lot of thanks for that. But just kind of a lot of getting into muralism is just getting used to rejection and just approaching every business owner and saying, hey, I notice your building keeps getting tagged. You want a permanent solution to it? Let me do a spray can art mural on it. And yeah, from there, like the more murals you get, the more you get, just because it's advertisement for itself. And you can't really start to build that portfolio until you show what you're capable of doing. So if you approach some company or some store owner and they say, what does your work look like? And you're like, good. Trust me. Like, it doesn't really work that way. Like, you just have to have work under your belt.
Do you think working with the community and working with youth has been really fulfilling? I know that is kind of the direction some of your mural making has started taking.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely prefer to do the murals that are very community oriented. Probably like 2 years ago, I was doing a lot of just very quick commercial murals, a lot of like mom and pop shops and smaller brands and stuff, and also some larger like corporate clients like Sheetz and Dick's Sporting Goods and stuff like that. So I think in 1 year, myself and my business partner, Shane, probably did like maybe like 70 murals in a year, which is like nuts. Yeah. And like some of them were like very quick, whatever thing. Some of them we got paid barely anything, but we were just kind of like very hungry at that point. We were like, yeah, let's just go. And that did help build our portfolio. But one of our goals now is to start finding more clients that pay better, and then we've just been handing off a lot of those jobs to our friends because we actually run a website, dowhatwelove.com. So anytime we can't take on a job or we're like, oh, that's not really like our thing or whatever, we're like, cool, we'll transfer you over to our painting partner Jerome or Brian or whoever. And so we've been able to like not reject all these like mom and pop shops, but just kind of like take a little pressure off ourselves. And for some of the projects where that are like more community involved, like some of those are ones where we get a grant or there's an RFQ and like we apply for these things, and sometimes they have really good funding, which is great because then we can devote a lot of our time to them. Or unfortunately, sometimes some community oriented things just have zero funding. And anytime there is a social cause, though, like if someone has passed away due to like police violence or like or anyone's passed away, really. Like, we try to offer up our services and be like, hey, we have the paint, we have the resources, just tell us where, tell us when, we'll show up, do it, and just knock it out in a day. And, like, but yeah, like, I would love to start doing many more community-oriented, like, long-term projects rather than just, like, a drop-in, meet some kids one day, be like, what's up, children? I'm here to paint a mural. Like, might not ever see you again. Good luck. I'd love to actually, like, be there for, like, a month at a time and, like, really focus in on the community and, like, do more than just have it serve as a commercial function.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I really like seeing cool graffiti around the city, and I'm sure a lot of our listeners feel the same. Where in the city should we go if we want to see the cool spots for graffiti lettering?
Yeah, I mean, so we actually created Pittsburgh's only legal sanctioned graffiti space in Bloomfield on the side of Trace Brewing. So if you use Google search Graffiti Alley, it pops up, and you can actually go there anytime, paint whatever, go over whatever. And we've actually had a few friends like start their mural careers there. Because you can just paint anything, take a photo, crop it, and show that to a potential client so that when they ask, what does your work look like, you can show them all these images, and they don't need to know it's all the same site. You just say Bloomfield. That's a cool place to, like, one, like, meet a lot of the graffiti community, because you'll at least meet one person while you're down there that's, like, from the community. And then we also revamped Color Park recently on the south side, where we had them install, like, actual walls built out of concrete blocks. So that's another site where you can do the same thing. There's not quite as many, like, graffiti writers or muralists that go there. A lot of that's just kind of, like, general community. But those are two cool spots where, like, if you're actually looking to paint, and it doesn't matter, like, what skill level you are, like, at all, like, you can paint there. Garfield, as a neighborhood, has a lot of really cool graffiti, especially, like, Penn Avenue, First Friday area.
So kind of on that topic of the art scene in Pittsburgh, how would you say that the graffiti scene and the art scene, are they just one scene, or are they two separate communities that sometimes interact, or is there a complete division between the two?
I would say in Pittsburgh, there's definitely a complete division, just because since Pittsburgh graffiti writers have been, like, so pushed to the outskirts of society due to, like, it's like all the, like, prosecution and persecution of graffiti in Pittsburgh, a lot of those people don't see themselves as, like, normally functioning part of society. And, like, so if anything, they're pretty adverse to art. And sometimes when they'll even see someone get into visual arts or try to do an art show or whatever, they'll be, like, disgusted by it. Like, oh, you're a sellout or whatever. And the older you get, though, the more everyone understands, like, okay, like, you have a family, you got to support whoever, and you grow up at some point. But Pittsburgh's slowly adapting to that, slowly getting used to, like, having its graffiti writers put on art shows. Although First Friday is, like, one of the few places that you'll see a lot of the graffiti writers present with a lot of the art scene, just because it is, like, so grassroots. But a lot of the art scene just doesn't know anything about the graffiti scene. Doesn't know that Pittsburgh actually has this, like, super long history of, like, graffiti writing and important figures from here, or things started from here. Even the most important graffiti documentary, Style Wars, it was put out on PBS 1983. Like, Henry Chalfant, the director of that, he's from Swickley, PA, so, like, 30 minutes outside Pittsburgh. His nephew lives in Garfield, and, like, we actually brought him out here to do a screening of his film at the Carnegie Museum of Art. And and it's just kind of, like, it's nuts that this guy who's internationally famous for his film gets, like, zero recognition in Pittsburgh from the arts community. And he found all of his success in New York. Definitely not much interest from the fine art scene in the graffiti scene.
Well, hopefully that's going to, change in the future, right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, Pittsburgh is notoriously behind the times on many things, which is one reason why, like, I have my mural career, because it's just starting off here, the mural scene, where every other city, it had started, like, in the 90s. So Pittsburgh is, like, just starting to accept graffiti art, muralism, and just kind of, like, the aesthetics of graffiti. So it Pittsburgh, it's like just starting to like accept like the culture of it as well.
Sure, yeah. I think that's just about all the time we have, but you've been listening to Forbes Avenue on WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM. Again, I'm one of your hosts, Archon Das, with
Kate Smiggy.
And we've been talking to Max Gonzalez, graffiti artist. Thanks, Max. Has been great having you on the show.
Thank you.
Have a good one.
Stay tuned for the One World Community Radio program on 89.5 FM Bush Radio, Cape Town, 88.7 FM WRHU, Hempstead Radio, Hofstra University, 88.1 FM WCWP, Brookville, LIU Post, 88.3 FM WRCT, Pittsburgh, Carnegie Mellon University, 88.3 FM WVCR, Loudonville, Siena College, 98.1 and 105.9 FM WKZE Salisbury Red Hook, and around the world at WRHU.org. This is One World Community Radio, coming up next on your favorite community radio station. Program, a collaboration between 89.5 FM Bush Radio, Cape Town, South Africa, and 88.7 FM WRHU Radio, Hofstra University in Hempstead, New York. Broadcasting from the Bush Radio Salt River Studios in Cape Town is host me, Lydia Makwanana. Broadcasting from WRHU Studios in Hempstead, New York, are your hosts, Cody Millar and Andy Gladding. We welcome you to join us for the next hour as we celebrate the power of community radio, music, language, and culture. The world is a big place, but using the power of radio, we're bringing it right to your door. Now Bush Radio and WRHU welcome you to the one world of community radio.
To the classics.
WRHU Hempstead, 89.5 Bush Radio, Cape Town, South Africa, and 88.3 WRCT Pittsburgh. You're listening to the One World Radio Show on the One World Radio Network. I'm your host, Cody Millar, broadcasting from Pittsburgh. Joined with me from New York is Ricky Hubert, and from Cape Town, Lydia Marquana. Joining us today is Demi from Magical Hijinks. Demi, thank you so much for joining us today on the One World Show.
Thank you so much for having me.
How are y'all doing this beautiful morning and afternoon? Beauty of broadcasting in multiple time zones is we got a variety of weathers.
We're all right, Cody. How are you? How is everything? We're just saying we're all in school zone. I'm a student. Cody's a teacher. So everybody's at like a different stage of the game in terms of the school year.
It's going all right, although it's a little cold at 13 degrees Fahrenheit right now, although it feels more like it's zero.
On my side, it is a super hot, like very, very hot. I couldn't even go outside the way it is so hot. We are on 30 degrees today. So yeah, it's blazing hot.
Well, I'm annoyed with the weather and I'm ready for it to not be so windy and cold. I don't mind the cold, but once you add these horrible winds we've been having, it's really just the tip of the iceberg for me. I'm done. I'm ready to leave the area for a few days.
Well, you get to leave the area quite a lot, Demi, with the work you do with Magical Hijinks. For those who don't know, tell us what you do, why we brought you on the show today with your work doing Magical Hijinks.
My YouTube channel and social media and business is Magical Hijinks. I am a theme park and travel YouTuber and content creator. And even though I am New York based, I travel down to Orlando mostly because that's where most people go down to vacation, the biggest destination for theme parks in the world. And every few weeks I head down there and I create videos in Walt Disney World, Universal, sometimes SeaWorld. And then I get to also go to other fun places too. Like this past year, I went to the opening of the brand new land called Fantasy Springs in Tokyo Disney Sea. I've done Disney cruises. I've gone to the California parks. And I love covering some smaller parks as well. And parks like Hershey and King's Dominion, Busch Gardens, any theme park you got, I'm happy to head over there. And I love being able to help people plan their trips and also bring people to the parks to escape a little in this world that we're in that we could all use a little escape.
Now, Debbie, when you're going on these trips to generate content, how long are you like in Orlando or other places for?
You know, it really depends on what's going on. So I typically go to Orlando. My schedule is usually based off of what's going on in the park. So, for example, in January, there was a mix of a couple of things. So I was there a little bit longer than maybe mostly in January, because in January we have Epcot's Festival of the Arts. So I usually base, you know, my time going down for around like the big events like that. And that's one of the most popular events that I cover. And then also this year was the opening of a brand new hotel for Universal Orlando called Stellanova Resort for the upcoming new theme park, Universal's Epic Universe, which opens May 22nd. So I was there from January 16th all the way to the 22nd. Because I had to wait for the opening. But then I had to go back down only a few weeks later to cover Mardi Gras in Universal Orlando. But for that, I was only there. I only needed to go for 2 nights because it wasn't that much to cover, you know, to like a one to two day thing to cover. And then I go back down in March for Epcot's Flower and Garden Festival. But I usually stay around like 4 days. So it's because I'm not just covering those big events. I'm also making lots of other content and other videos. And basically what I do is I plan out my days and I create my content, make all my videos, and then I take them back home with me to New York and I edit them and I release them twice a week.
Demi, no, I don't think this is something where you wake up one morning and say, I'm going to do this. It's kind of something that you figure out as you go along. What made you realize that this kind of work that you do with Magical Hijinks was something you had to explore for yourself?
You know, actually, it kind of was that. I work in theater in New York City. I've been working in professional theater since I'm 17 years old. And then back in 2020, when we shut down, I don't know if anyone was aware, but there was this thing called a global pandemic and we were stuck at home. And I wasn't a person that grew up going to the parks. I was raised by a single mom and we did our little regional parks, but you know, I always loved amusement parks and theme parks. So back in 2016, when I went with my boyfriend to Universal and Disney as just like a little vacation, I kind of started hyperfixating on the parks. So when I would be home, I would be watching videos or reading things all about all the parks and I'd get really excited about it. We went to Paris for our honeymoon in 2018. And we also got to go to Disneyland Paris. And then for my 25th birthday in December 2019, we went to Disney. And it was my first time going to not just Magic Kingdom, because that's all we did back in 2016. But that was my first time. It's so recent that my first time in Epcot, Hollywood Studios, and Animal Kingdom was in 2019, December. And I left that trip thinking, I need to figure out a way to come here more. I love this. I love this place. And then we shut down in March, and I had no idea what was going to happen for the future of theater or the future, I guess, in general. And I started making like an Instagram first. You don't know what you're going to start. You just start something and you figure it out as you go. And I had an Instagram with a totally different name. And I was just kind of posting pictures of my trips to Disney and Universal. and just kind of starting out with that community. And then I decided, because we were home, I was going to start making cooking videos of Disney Parks food that you can make at home. Because I thought that was a little bit different than just like, you know, something else, but it's something that I could do. And at the time, I actually didn't even put myself on camera. I was never a person that was in front of a lot of people. I was a stage manager, still am on the side, but I was doing cooking videos of overhead cooking style. So I started that, and I realized, like, maybe 3 months into this, what am I doing? I hate cooking. I hate cooking. And then they announced the opening of the reopening of Walt Disney World and the reopening of Universal. And I kind of just looked at my husband and I said to him, I think I'm going to go. Literally, that's literally what I said. I just had this bug in me. And, you know, it was going to be my first time on camera. And you just kind of have to do it if you think you want to do it. And I knew, like, maybe this is something I could do. So I went to the reopening in, what was it, July of 2020. And I covered the reopenings of every parks. I got an annual pass before they actually, it was amazing because they stopped selling you annual passes. I got it just in time. And I covered the reopenings. And then I put out the videos and they were doing really well. And then I was posting on socials. And then in October, I rebranded to Magical Hijinks because originally I was the Disney Kitchen because I was cooking, right? And after that, and you can still see all those old videos on the channel. They're still there. After that, it was like October. And I was like, you know, what if I went back down? I could do a little bit more. And yeah, that's kind of what happened. I just started going down more and more. And then I kind of...
Eins, sieben, fünf, vier, eins, eins. sieben, fünf, vier, eins, eins. Achtung, zwei, neun, zwei, null, sechs. Trennung, vier, drei. Achtung, zwei, neun, zwei, null, sechs. Trennung, vier, drei.
Nur Mut anti Eastern, Convalisurne id, Lassini adjusto. Grass ultras is odio ecetto guluctus, it bipendum magna rudrum. Nullum fuja id nib necu. Chop chop.
We should chop.